The Oxford Sparks Podcast, Episode 12, Land, Sea and Air, Part 1.
One of the really interesting facts, historical facts, is when the great pioneers of Himalayan geology, Augusto Ganser and Arnold Heim, who were the first to really walk across the Himalayas 60 years ago, they were puzzled because the further up structural section they went, the higher the metamorphic grade, the deeper the rock. So it meant that the whole of the southern part of the Himalayas is actually upside down, which was amazing. Well, how do you make that? My name is Mike Searle. I'm at the University of Oxford in the Department of Earth Sciences, and I've been in Oxford for 23 years now. I've spent my entire life pretty much working in the Himalayas. I'm a structural geologist, so I do a lot of field work and mapping, and then sample collecting. We bring the samples back to Oxford, and we analyse them for mineral chemistry, and we try to derive pressures and temperatures, and we try to date the rocks using uranium lead isotopes. So then we have all the parameters we need for interpreting how rocks are evolving in time. So my main interest is really how mountains are made and how plates move across the earth. And to do this, you need to really get out into the field and map the area. So everything hinges on the field work and the mapping. And then from that, everything else falls into place. Well, we know since the 1960s, which was the great plate tectonic revolution in geology, when people first realised that the Earth was made up of about 8 or 9 major lithospheric plates and they moved around. So you were creating oceanic crust at mid-ocean ridges, and these were pushing the continents apart, like Africa, South America. And then when continents collide, like along the Alpine Himalayan belt, you get these spectacular mountains. And that's what I work on, mostly the Alpine Himalayan belt. So I've been looking at the Himalayas, which is the youngest, the biggest, the best, and it has the most spectacular mountains. And because it's the youngest, it is a very, very good place to try to figure out the processes that are going on during mountain building.
On the 25th of April 2015, a 7.8 magnitude earthquake hit the Gorkha region of Nepal, killing over 8,000 people.
During the last earthquake in Nepal, the rocks beneath Kathmandu moved by 7 metres horizontally in about 2 seconds. And all the area north of Kathmandu rose by about 1.5 metres in 2 seconds. And this earthquake is representative of 50 million years of similar earthquakes, how the Himalayas are made. So the Himalayas is a mountain belt that was born about 50 million years ago. It's still very much rising today, and it's still shortening today.
Mapping can provide useful insights into the geological history of a region, and can be a very simple process.
The whole mountain belt is tilted to the north, so when you start off trekking from India or the plains of Nepal and hike up towards the high mountains of Everest, you're progressively going from deep to shallow as you go up the section. And then we can use the mapping of the structures. So there's a lot of folds where rocks are folded and where they've deformed by thrusting. And once you've mapped that, you can actually unwind those folds and thrusts. So we are unwinding time to figure out what the rocks look like before the collision. Now, after the collision, the crust is progressively thickened and shortened. And when you thicken and shorten the crust, you are increasing the crustal thickness, and of course pressure and temperature increases as you go down. So we're now looking at, in the Himalayas, at approximately double the normal thickness crust. Underneath normal crust, it's about anything from 30 to 40 kilometers thick. Underneath the Himalayas, it's about 75, and it thickens to a maximum of about 85-90 underneath southern Tibet. Now down at those levels, deep crustal levels, the pressures and temperatures are so high that the rocks will transform. So limestone at the surface, a sedimentary rock, will transform to a marble. A shale will transform to what we call a p-lite or a gneiss. And those have very specific minerals in. As you increase pressure and temperature, you go through various characteristic minerals. So garnet, staurolite, kyanite, selenite, with increasing temperature. When you increase the temperature so much that the rock actually starts to melt, you will create what's called a migmatite, which is a mixed rock. It's half metamorphic and half melt. And then eventually that whole rock will melt to produce a granite. and most of the high peaks of the Himalayas are actually made of granite. And mapping is the key for interpreting any geological process. So when I go out to Nepal next month, I will walk from Pokhara in western Nepal northwards along a valley towards the high Himalayas of Annapurna and Machu Picchu, and I will map as I go. And I will then construct a cross-section in two dimensions, interpret what's going on in three dimensions, and then the next thing to do is collect rock samples as I'm going along, bring them back to Oxford, we cut them and make what we call thin sections, which are very, very thin, micron-thin sections of the rock, look at them under the microscope, and then you can determine precisely the mineral composition of that rock. And we pick the best ones, which have all the nice minerals in, and we stick them in the scanning electron microscope or the microprobe, and we can determine precise chemical compositions of all the mineral phases. And then I pass it on to my very clever colleagues, who's a metamorphic petrologist, and he can determine the precise pressures and temperatures that that rock formed at.
Understanding the changes as time has passed is crucial in geology.
Time is the most important criteria of geology. That is what geology hinges on. So what we can do in the Himalayas is take a granite, for example, and these have little tiny radioactive minerals like zircon, monazite, and we can put them in some very sophisticated machinery and determine, by using the uranium and the lead isotopic ratios, the age of that rock. So then we can have one rock and we can determine what's in it mineral wise. We can determine temperature, pressure, depth, and time. And what we find is that from the high Himalayas, which were formed between 20 and 15 million years ago, all the way down south towards Kathmandu, towards Pokhara, the rocks get progressively younger.
Earthquakes, such as that on the 25th of April 2015, can provide insights into how the rocks are forming.
The earthquake was very instrumental because now we have loads of satellites going round around the Earth. And when you have a satellite passes over Nepal, before the earthquake, you have an exact digital elevation model of the ground surface, what it is. And then the earthquake goes off, the satellite goes back over the same grounds, and we find that the huge area of land north of Kathmandu has risen by a metre and a half instantly during the earthquake. And that's quite amazing, because that means that Nepal has actually shrunk. During the earthquake, Nepal has shrunk by about anything up to about 2 metres. Now, the big thing with this earthquake was that we know a huge area of central Nepal ruptured, so it split along a fault. And that's the earthquake initiated at depths of between 20 and 15 kilometres. And what it should have done is transfer all that pent-up stress up to the surface on the active fault, which is the one that runs along the southern edge of the Himalayas. This earthquake did not rupture to the surface. And we know that underneath Kathmandu, the rocks move by anything up to 7 metres horizontally, which is a big worry because it means all that strain is still down there. And there will definitively be another earthquake, and it is likely to go off somewhere south of Kathmandu or to the west of Pokhara, the epicentre, which is the area that did not rupture. So we can say with confidence that there will be another earthquake, but nobody can say when, and that is the big problem.
Mike believes that learning more about how these mountains are evolving will prove crucial to protecting from future disastrous events.
There's parts of Tibet, which is the highest, biggest plateau on the planet, that are completely unexplored. In eastern Tibet, there are 3 mountain ranges the size of the Alps, about which we know almost nothing. We know more about the surface of the moon than we know about eastern Tibet. So there's an enormous amount of our planet that remain unexplored, and as time goes on and methods of determining seismic properties of the crust, determining thermobarometric properties of minerals, we will continue to learn more and more and more. And this will help because, you know, parts of the Himalayas, Burma, it's incredibly active seismically. And the more we can determine what's happening on some of these big fault systems, how the earthquake systems work, you know, this will help, because there's cities there that are in great danger of things like earthquakes. Just in Burma alone, the 2 major cities, Rangoon and Mandalay, are built right on on the Sagang Fault, which is one of the most active strike slip faults in the world. So we need to figure out how that fault works, when past earthquakes have gone off, how far it's moved through geological time, and where the next earthquakes are likely to go off. Mountain belts are an enormous part of the Earth's geology. They reflect where previous plates have collided, and they are an incredible resource. You know, there's secrets tied up in the rocks there that we can determine. We can unlock those secrets using all this great technology that we have, the geophysics, the deep seismic, the magnetotelluric, the basic geological facts on which everything hinges. What is the surface of the Earth made of? So ultimately, everything revolves around those first geological maps, and then determining everything from that in terms of geochemistry, geophysics, seismics, thermobarometry, and dating rocks using uranium lead isotopes. That's the way forward. And by combination of all of these branches of geology, that is what is going to unlock the secrets of how the Earth works, how mountains are made.
You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Brian McInwells. This podcast was produced for the University of Oxford by Steve Pritchard. For more fascinating science, visit www.oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk.